The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It is 4 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 29th of April. And you're very welcome along to The Greg Hughes Show, broadcasting from a delightfully sunny northwest of Ireland. Whether you're listening to us in the region, you will know if you look out the window or wherever you are. I hope it's as pleasant for you as it is for us. And we have a lot coming up on the show today. We're going to be speaking to the HSC about the situation at the Buncrana Community Hospital and what the plan is, when it might be delivered, and what mistakes have been made up until now. We'll be speaking to a representative of the HSC, and we welcome them onto the programme to get an opportunity to put questions directly to them. So stay tuned for that. And it is quite fitting. I did announce this yesterday, but I was a wee bit premature. We are in the garden today for the first time for 2026. So if you have any questions in relation to your garden, maybe it is your patio area, maybe it's your windowsill or a little gap you have at the front door, feel free to get in touch with us and we'll get answers from Paul for you, 086 60 25. Now, I'd imagine there's probably a lot of mossy questions out there, you know, at this time of year. Maybe it's your first, second cut, if you're lucky enough to have a bit of ground and you've seen that moss, it's like walking on a carpet. What do you do? Well, we'll have advice for you on that. Or maybe you're planning on planting a hedge or trimming a hedge or whatever it might be. Garden bedding, all that kind of stuff. 086 60 25000, the WhatsApp and the text numbers. That means, by the way, obviously you can SMS us, which many of you do, or you can send us the messages through WhatsApp, which means it's guaranteed free for you. You can also WhatsApp us voice notes as well too, which we get from time to time, and we can play them out as well too. It's just another way for us to interact with each other, isn't it? The old way is still there too. Give us a call, 07491 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. If you're listening to the podcast or the overnight repeat, feel free to get in touch and we'll carry your comments over onto the next live show. The front of the Finn Valley Voice. Beloved teen Josh Morrow will be laid to rest in Glenfinn on Wednesday afternoon. The talented 16-year-old, a rising young sportsman, was killed when the motorcycle he was on was involved in a road traffic collision in Clohan on Saturday. The sun sat high above Altna Peast on Saturday, but the air turned dark as the full extent of what had happened began to emerge. A talented rugby player at Finn Valley Rugby Club, where he was named Player of the Season last year, Josh played for Ulster only a couple of weeks ago, and he played for Ulster both under 16 and under 18 levels, while he also lined out for Capri Rovers and Glen Finn GA Club. Such a talented, handsome young man, and as a dad of three boys as well. It really, this, you know, I think it's affected us all in far deeper ways than just hearing a bit of news and moving on. Such is the loss. And so what I'm trying to say is to the family at this impossible time for them that we are feeling and sharing and hopefully helping them carry the loss in the very difficult day ahead that they have. Unimaginable, the days ahead, the weeks and well beyond that as well. Just to let them know that we are very much thinking on them at this incredibly difficult time and in a meaningful way as well. So I wish them every bit of strength that is required to cope just as best as they can this morning, today, and as I say, going forward. On to the national newspapers, the Irish Independent. We're changing how we stick together, if we do stick together at all. New figures from the Central Statistics Office show a 7.7% decline in the number of marriages in Ireland between 2014 and 2024. They point to a redistribution of demand rather than a collapse in demand. This according to Catherine McVade, a humanist wedding celebrant. Yep, so these weddings where you go and everything's on the one site, I would never have heard tell of them over the years, but have been at a couple actually in recent years. So they are, obviously. I'm just a regular person. They are obviously becoming more popular. Was Miss McWade, who is chairwoman of One Spirit Ireland, told the Irish Independent, interfaith ministers are busier than ever conducting milestone ceremonies for families, including marriages. The biggest story is not fewer weddings, but changing preferences, with more couples opting for civil, humanitarian, one spirit Ireland or independent celebrants instead of traditional church ceremonies, she said. Now, I didn't realise there was so many options. I thought you either got married in a church or there was this other civil thing you did, you know, in the hotel or wherever it might be. But there's lots of different options, apparently. One Spirit Ireland was one of the first non-church ministers groups registered with the Civil Registration Authority as a marriage solemniser in the country. So what do you think about that? Does it matter? Each to their own. That's what I believe, if I'm completely honest with you. But people are seeing other options, and, you know, if they love each other and stay together, isn't that really what's not stay together, you know what I mean, if it suits them to stay together, but isn't that what's more important than anything? Or is it? On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and Ukrainians will have to prove they are self-sufficient to be allowed to remain in Ireland and be placed on a pathway to citizenship, the Irish Daily Mail can reveal. It's kind of interesting, this different approach, because obviously up until now, the government had an approach to dealing with Ukrainian people that moved over here. And this was in the aftermath of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Now, the situation is still dire over there. There are thousands upon thousands of soldiers being killed on both sides, primarily the Russian side, every single day. There's bombs, drones, and missiles fired from Ukraine into Russia and vice versa. So there's still an inherent danger there. The danger, I should say, hasn't eased. But our policy is changing, and I wonder what the basis of that is. Maybe it's that people are here more long-term and are settled themselves and perhaps will live here forever. I don't know. But the situation in Ukraine hasn't changed, but our response certainly has. Confidential documents obtained by the Mail detailed plans for the end of the Temporary Protection Directive and the withdrawal of permanent supports for Ukrainian refugees fleeing the Russian war within the next year. The documents show a seismic shift in policy is being readied to remove all long-term accommodation supports for most of the 60,000 Ukrainians currently availing of them by March 2027. For instance, I don't know if this is a big reveal, because the that €600 tax-free payment that they receive for rent, that is and has been for quite some time penciled in to end in March of 2027. But anyway, reading on, and the Department of Housing has been tasked with assessing whether the modular homes being used by 2,640 Ukrainians, which will be taken away in March, can be used by it in the future. But critics of the plans have warned it will lead to a homelessness crisis among Ukrainians and result in thousands more people competing for already scarce rental accommodation. Well, I mean, we're already dealing with that at the moment, and there is a homelessness problem in this country. I don't know what the breakdown of the ability for Ukrainians to pay for accommodation. I don't know what the story is, but it would level the playing field so that everybody is in the same position, regardless of where they come from. They're squeezing Gerry Hutch. He still intends, as far as I'm aware, to contest the election down in Dublin. But the front of the Irish Times, Spanish authorities have frozen Gerry Hutch's property assets in the country as part of an ongoing money laundering investigation into the gangland figure who plans to run in a by-election in Dublin next month. The revelation comes as Hutch refused to detail the extent of his property holdings in advance of the May 22nd Dublin Central by-election, which he said he plans to enter as an independent candidate. Hutch, who has made millions of euro over the years from property investments, told the Irish Times that he would disclose his assets only if elected, though he suggested he may be the wealthiest TD in the Dáil if he wins a seat. Since 2015, Hutch, 63, has lived almost half time on, or full time, should I say, on the Spanish island of Lanzarote. And he loves the press, and this is what it's all about. It's quite remarkable, really. He does love this back and forward. He does lots of interviews, and I'm not sure really he's got, considering he lives in Lanzarote, what's his interest really in running for election in Dublin. He just likes to stay relevant, I think, or have his face out there. There's definitely a big ego, and the newspapers, and I suppose I, to some extent, in reading that, pander to that, don't they? The Irish Daily Mirror reports that public representatives should refrain from providing character references to anyone convicted of abuse or violence, the Taoiseach has said. This is an on-running controversy the Taoiseach has weighed in now. It comes after former Fianna Fáil TD Jim Glennon provided a reference for a convicted sex offender. In March last year, Daniel Ranamurthly was convicted of the sexual exploitation of a 13-year-old boy at a Christian children's camp. Mr. Glennon, who was a TD in the Dublin North constituency between 2002 and 2007, confirmed he had submitted a character reference for him and said it was an error of judgment. I just can't get my head around how you could write anything glowing or supportive of a man who would do that to a 13-year-old boy. I just can't see any scenario where I could find myself doing that, including family, if the truth be told. It's I just can't understand it. Donald Trump thinks Iran has admitted their regime is on the state of collapse or in a state of collapse. That's what Donald Trump claimed yesterday. You know, he's been wrong before. As negotiations stalled, he told online followers about Tehran's concerns. Trump said on Truth Social, Iran has just informed us they are in a state of collapse. And he added, they want to open the Hormuz Strait as soon as possible as they try to figure out their leadership situation. I mean, he closed it. It was his actions that closed it. And he's actually going to claim the reopening of it as a victory, which is bizarre. Reports say hardline military chiefs now rule Iran as their new supreme leader is comatosed. And lastly, texting. We all text now. What's your experience of texting younger people? Do you find that you can't understand what they are saying in their text messages? Well, reading here in the Irish Daily Star, ever stared at a text from a mate or your teenager and had absolutely no clue what they were trying to say? You're certainly not alone. I do, but it's not because they're in short text. It's just because they're not using the thumb correctly. New 2026 data has revealed the exact text abbreviations, leaving Irish people scratching their heads and running to Google for answers. Word-finding experts at unsclamberer.com analyse Google Trends data, and SMH, what does that stand for? SMH, well, I know, has officially taken the crown as Ireland's most confused acronym. So people are getting text SMH and then they're running to Google and say, what does SMH mean? A huge 20,100 monthly searches were made by baffled smartphone users trying to figure out it simply means shaking my head. Coming in a close second was PMO. What's that? A spokesperson from Scrambler.com noted that social media moves so fast it can actually change what these letters mean overnight. They pointed out that PMO, mainstream meaning, recently shifted from the innocent put me on to peas me off. And on it goes, TBH. LOL was the old classic, and still to some extent there are people that believe it means lots of love. But anyway, that's kind of cute, isn't it? Max, good morning to you, Max.
Good morning. Good morning.
Right. Now, Max, you as a Ukrainian came here in August 2022. What was the situation in your country or your region of the country when you decided to move?
Well, I would say the situation was very, very, obviously very bad. We only just not publishing it as much as in those days, but it's still the same or even worse, because there's a lot of we've been through 4 years of war. We're coming to the fifth year of war, and there's a lot of hardships that lots of Ukrainians have experienced, and people coming here, not they're still coming, escaping the places of danger there.
Yeah, just when I was looking through these government proposals, what I didn't or fully understand is that, you know, there's a proposed huge overhaul of the supports for Ukrainian people here, but the situation actually hasn't changed in Ukraine. So I'm curious. I would love to get in contact with a minister and find out, why is our position changed? In other words, did we Were we too generous to begin with? Does the government actually believe that the situation in Ukraine is safe for now? Do you know what I mean? I can't figure out what has changed between then and now.
Well, usually when it happens like that, there could be all sorts of different reasons. As for being generous, definitely Ireland has been, in my experience, one of the most friendliest, probably the friendliest country, and not just in terms of help, but also this matters even more, the way they treat people, the way they treat, because the Irish people do understand what it's like to go through difficult times. And obviously, yeah. And it's, I gotta say, it's not also the hard times for Ukrainians, for a specific nation, but for everybody in the country. So obviously, it's hard to go through this time of life in the same way as we did before. So there's, I understand there should be changes that to stay.
So at the moment, you've been supported since you've come here. And you're currently in government-supported accommodation. So do you, I think you've just indicated there, you understand there was a period of time, presumably, for people to get on their feet, to become as self-sufficient as possible. Would you go as far as to say that you support the government's plans to withdraw at least the majority of these supports?
I understand that there are things that unfortunately have to happen. And there are people who eventually going to make changes in their lives, whether minor or big. I also understand that Ireland has done a lot for Ukrainians, and the Ukrainian is more than grateful to. And to receive the safety and calmness and eventually sort of peace. And whatever happens, we are very, very grateful. I think that it also has to do it's a lot of, every country has their own things to deal with, and the housing crisis is definitely thing in Ireland. So it's not just for Ukrainians, it's also a housing crisis for Irish people themselves. So it's not easy. It is not easy, and I think everyone's trying to find the way to make things work. And Ukrainians, like I said, it's been 4 years to come to the fifth year of full-scale war. And it's hard to adjust. It's war, and not everything goes by the plan, obviously.
And Max, this isn't a loaded question, or it's not a question with an ulterior motive. It's just something I'm curious of, and to get an understanding. Do you travel back and forwards from Ukraine over the last 4 or 5 years?
No. As you know, yes, there was a. I've seen as because I work and get to see a lot of Ukrainians. I get to see people who travel to the regions. Perhaps mostly it's the regions that are perhaps not as
active
under threat. Not as active, but they still are. To my understanding, I think it's not really. I don't get that because, first of all, you're still under threat. You're literally putting yourself under threat, and they're like, any chance could happen. And
I don't know your age or your status, Max. Would you also potentially be conscripted if you were a fan to be back in Ukraine?
Well, I am 29,
okay.
And I stay here in Letterkenny. I would say that yes, there are places where I could probably go upon the arrival. You mean if the border is still there?
Yes, in other words, you'd be compelled to join the fight, effectively.
Like that's what I was going to say. Like whether there would be a fight or there would be like in the office there. Yeah,
part of the war effort, so to speak. Either yourself or if you feel you can speak on some of the Ukrainian or all of the Ukrainian community here, what level of support would President Zelensky and his administration have in terms of, you know, their position in relation to this war, if that makes sense? Because there is the option, of course, and many Ukrainians are presumably against it, to sort of draw the battle lines now and end this. Obviously, Zelensky is of the view that that would give up, you know, many of the fortress cities that helps Ukraine defend itself from future attacks. But overall, what do you believe either Ukrainians in the country or even those perhaps outside who maybe can see the bigger picture? What is your view on his leadership, his government, and his approach to this war that was put on the people of Ukraine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you very much. As a Ukrainian, I perhaps I'm not a candidate for like an ultimate thought or ultimate opinion of on behalf of all Ukrainians, but I would say that, like I said earlier, war never goes by a plan or like a sketch or like a scenario. There are some things that could go really unpredictable, and lots of Irish people at work also ask me, well, are we going to stop? Is it going to what's going to happen? Perhaps will everybody go, or everybody will come back, or how long will the war last for? And the short answer is, we don't know. We will have to see. That depends a lot on a lot of things. I know that President Vladimir Zelensky, he is there and he is with the country. It's a quite rough time for the country and obviously for the world, because due to the economics and globalization that's impacting every single country, has this ripple effect. So it is a time to be supportive
Ukraine. Okay, I get where you're coming from. One final question, because it's coming in quite a lot, and it's actually a welcome opportunity to ask someone from Ukraine this. There is this sense that over here amongst some people, Max, that Ukraine is a very large country and that the war is in a small part of that country, and that there are many, many safe places around Ukraine where one could move to if they felt under threat in the east or in Kyiv or wherever it might be. What do you say to people who wonder why people didn't move around Ukraine internally rather than fleeing to other countries such as Ireland?
I was asking this question actually myself, and it happens to background experience of people, because for example people who live closer to the Polish border and perhaps go to Poland used to go to Poland on weekends, They could probably get accustomed there. Well, I have never been to Poland, for example. However, I studied as an interpreter in Ukraine, and it was my English was my specialization. So, therefore, it's natural for somebody with the skills and knowledge of the country or of the region he or she feels comfortable with to go somewhere. Yeah, we have a saying in Ukraine, the fish is looking for deep waters and a man is looking for a place of his home.
Okay.
So, yes, yes. So there are things, that could be one of the things.
Okay.
Yeah, I understand. There also could be other things. I don't know, maybe because I know some people, they come to Ireland because it's the technically it's the only country in Europe that where the language is.
But also,
English.
Max, you know, other countries. Of course, but also too, yeah. Right? You know, I mean, I think sometimes when people ask those questions, they kind of know the answers themselves because the reality is you have an option. Not you, a person in Ukraine has an option to move to another part of Ukraine with no support, no house, no nothing. And there is an option then to come to Ireland to get supports, to get a roof over their head and potentially to start a new life and take their kids out of there. So my point is I don't think it's a big secret that for some people it's going to be a safety, but also a financial and security decision. That is why you wouldn't move to a rural part of southwest Ukraine or wherever it is, when you can get on a flight, fly for an hour and a half, and you know, have government supports, which the Ukrainian government can't supply, housing, which might be difficult to source in a different part of Ukraine, and an education and security for your children. Like, I don't think that's a big secret, whether people like that that's happening or not. Of course, that's going to be the motivation for people leaving Ukraine.
Yes.
Pretending otherwise.
Yeah. Like I said, there are different kind of reasons, and that's the thing. If we are talking about within the Ukraine, yes, I think 12 million of Ukrainians have moved either within the country or outside the country in total. Yeah, I don't remember the percentage of people moving within or outside the country exact, but. Like I said, there are different kind of background experiences. And also, when we talk about the Ukraine, like I said earlier, when we were talking about people who are coming back, my personal opinion, I don't understand the risk because you're still drawn to home. But also, it is a huge risk. So people are going there, and it's, even in the western area of Ukraine, like I said, it's still not safe there. You still have missiles and rockets flying into homes, houses, and it's not. Like I said in the beginning. It's broadcasted less, but it doesn't mean it's safer.
Yeah,
so
I
would say it's definitely a tough situation. And when we come into the, when Ukrainians are in Ireland, there's always things that gonna be there, you know, they have to deal with, and whether it be, a housing crisis or a rent or, in Ukraine or in Ireland, it is a huge thing, a problem there to deal with. And
Max, I must move on. I really appreciate your time, your frankness, and the conversation. Thank you very much indeed for that. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Someone on YouTube commented, three countries traveled through to get here. Ask him his route. There's no, it's not like that. I think you're maybe confusing. I think you might be confusing our system with that of someone seeking international protection. for the purpose of the European response to the Ukraine, Europe and Ukraine is part of Europe, effectively. People can travel freely wherever they like. They can go to France, then Germany, then Spain, then here. It's not like maybe if you're coming from a North African country, for an example. So some of this stuff is not really a secret. It's the system, whether you like the system or not. Many people don't. Some people do. Many people do. Some people don't. It is the system. And as I said to Max, minds will be on. It's like, of course, people are going to look, whether we like it or not, whether it was made too attractive or not. People are going to look at it and go, right, well, here's an opportunity. Still, even to this day, getting 600 quid a month towards rent, a roof over their head, access to education, free bus transport, etc., etc., free third level fees. If I were in Ukraine, would I go, well, okay, I'll have a piece of that rather than stay here and risk getting squashed by a drone. I don't think it's a secret, is the point I'm trying to make, if that makes sense. But text me. People are going to think I'm taking one side or other. I'm not. I'm just trying to have a frank, open conversation. Right, just in relation to Ukraine, someone says Ukraine is not part of Europe, but for the purpose of the response to it, it was deemed to be, if that makes sense. The war is only one quarter of the country. Why not live in another part of the country as opposed to coming here? Ireland is suffering from a huge housing crisis at the moment. Well, they were invited here. And in Max's situation, whether you like it or not, 29-year-old male, he would be forced to become part of that war effort. Perhaps he doesn't want to. Ask him how they can all go back on regular holidays to a war-torn country, and how come all borders were traffic jammed recently with so many Ukrainians returning for Easter holidays. He hasn't himself, but I put that to him. The Ukrainians I know here in Donegal go back for holidays, dental, etc., to collect the rent for their properties in Ukraine. Is that? Do you know those people, really? I'm not doubting you. I wouldn't say you'd lie. Or is that sort of a collection of stuff that you've been told as well? I mean, if you know that, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if people were peed off about that. Ukraine is 9 times bigger than Ireland, and the war's only in a part of it, so Ukrainians should be helped to return to a peaceful part of their homeland. But, I mean, say, for instance, it was Dublin, and Dublin was getting bombed, but then someone decided that they're going to send 60 drones to Donegal. You know, I mean, whilst it's only part of the country where it's focused, you know, there are targets elsewhere. As I say, I'm just throwing that out there to see what you have to say. Right, now, Councillor Liam Blaney has come in for a bit of criticism, it would seem, in relation to the defective concrete block scheme, and he's with us now. Good morning, Liam.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, now, you have made, which I don't have in front of me, you have, I do have them here. You said there were many positives of the enhanced effective concrete block scheme. A lot of Donegal people were getting their homes rebuilt and were happy with the process and the outcome. But the 100% redress party doesn't like to hear that. So, I mean, those were your comments. I presume you stand by them. I think I've heard you say something similar in the past.
Well, that's not all I said about it, Greg. I started off prior to that by saying that, as I always say, that there are people out there who the scheme does accommodate, and there are people out there who are getting their houses remediated for the scheme and who have got their houses remediated for the scheme. And I said everybody on the other side of the chamber knows somebody has got, or most of them, if not them all, knows somebody that has got their houses remediated by the scheme. But I always put this bit to it at the end. Never do I mention, but I put this bit to it, is that there's people out there who the scheme does not accommodate. And it is up to us all on here, this is my words, up to us all in here to work together to find solutions for that. That is the first comments I made. And I make them regularly. And as soon as I make comments about people, about the scheme accommodating people, I'm attacked right away. And the people, the 100% crowd, does not want to hear it and does not like to hear it. They want about negative all the time, that the scheme is not working. They don't want to see people getting their houses remediated because there'll be no need for them.
You also got them remediated. Okay, well, there's a couple of things there I want to pick you on up there. But one of the things you said is that you're saying that the scheme is not for everyone, but it would accommodate a lot of people, and that the negativity towards the scheme by, and you've labelled, you've placed this at the door of the 100% Redress Party, it's preventing people who could benefit from the scheme going on the scheme. So you're saying, are you, that that party that is campaigning for 100% is actually putting people off being able to avail of the scheme?
Yes, 100% stand over that. And it's not just that party. It's other parties as well that has been, and the amount of people still, Greg, and I'm quite sure you meet them, and you hear it, I hear it all the time on the radio stations and everywhere else too, about the scheme, and it's going to cost me far too much, I can't afford to go into it. People believe what they hear, because this is what has been pumped to them out there. There's people getting their houses, have their houses remediated, that do not want to see it because they're afraid that they'll get it on Facebook. That's what it is like. But the negativity that is, and I would encourage people to go talk to an engineer, and the engineer will tell you a fair idea of whether you're going to, whether you're going to need to put 100,000, 50,000, and cases nothing, along with the grant that you get in the scheme.
So if you
the negativity that that I was hitting at, Greg, that preventing people, and I talk to people on a regular basis about it, and the amount of people that think that they can't downsize. The amount of people think that it's going to cost me thousands and thousands along the scheme is useless, it's no good. It's unbelievable the amount of people out there still believe that. And it does not accommodate, and I always say it, it does not accommodate everybody. And that's the people we are trying to fight for, and we will fight for the time and the scheme that, does, what, that suits them as well.
So, like, if 10 people apply to the scheme, but it depends on their houses, but what percentage or what... Do you have a rough idea, either, you know, literally or anecdotally, how many people who have gone through the scheme have not found themselves out of pocket? But you believe there are those that have gone through the scheme and are not out of pocket. But do you have any idea? Do you think it's 1 in 4, 1 in 3, 1 in 5, 9 out of 10? I don't know.
I can't say, Greg. It's a guess. But the amount of people that's afraid to say, first of all, yes, I got my house remediated for the scheme. Unbelievable. Don't say I said it. That's just what they're telling me. Don't say I said it, but I did get it for the scheme. Like, people's afraid out there to put their head above the parapet. And the amount I mentioned people get their houses and has got their houses remediated for the scheme.
No,
what the grant is available.
Yes, but we
I get attacked in the chamber every single time I say it.
Well, we've all seen.
But I don't say it in a one liner. I don't say it in a one liner. I always say, I know there's people out there the scheme does not accommodate. Mm. And that's the people we're trying to fight for, to try and get a scheme that will suit them as well. But, you know, a lot of time we're hitting our head against a brick wall and we're looking for extra funding for these schemes and looking for to accommodate other people. And there is, in fairness, people in dire needs, and especially somebody is disabled or something, getting a house. And we're fighting hard to try and get it. And we're not getting nowhere, but hopefully there will be a solution to it.
Hugh Gallagher, you heard Liam Blaney's comments. So when you've heard them fully now, rather than maybe them being represented on his behalf, or I don't know what the reporting was like, I didn't read the report. So you've heard Liam Blaney's comments there in the round. He accepts that there's a unified battle needed in the council chamber to enhance this scheme, to bring as many people in as is possible. He also has said, though, a lot of people have benefited from the scheme, aren't out of profit, and are afraid to speak out because they would get their heads taken off them. What's your view, Hugh?
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, Liam. I was absolutely appalled and disgusted by Councillor Blaney's comments yesterday. He's saying that people are not joining the scheme because of the negativity of the 100% Redress Party. He called them the 100% crowd. Now, that's very, very disrespectful. These Fianna Fáil politicians expect respect, but give total disrespect to other people. I'll tell you why people are not joining the scheme. They're joining the scheme because it's far, far too expensive. Could I just briefly outline my own position?
Of course, that's no problem.
Okay. February the 6th, I joined the scheme in good faith. February the 16th, my house was demolished. 9 weeks elapsed because an hour after it was demolished, it was found that the foundations were absolutely rotten. Now, I sent a video, Greg. Did you see it?
I'm looking at it right now, yeah.
It's appalling, would you not agree?
They're at the foundations.
They're the foundations. They're meterbox blocks.
Yeah.
I spoke to the man in the digging machine at my house yesterday. He was astonished that the house didn't fall. So as you can see, they're like meterbox blocks. In addition, the foundations go down for 5.5 meters. An average house would be 1.5 meters. Now, I won't mention the builder who built the house. Absolutely disgraceful. Could I mention who supplied the blocks?
No, we'll leave that to one side. People can work that out.
I can probably guess who supplied the blocks.
It's just
They're crumbling and they go down for 5.5 meters. Now, in order, as you know, and as Councillor Blaney will know as well, this totally unsatisfactory scheme doesn't cover foundations. I've got to pay more than €75,000 upfront for these foundations.
Just in relation to that, Liam, and I'll come back to you. I mean, you know, I think John McLaughlin here sat in front of me and I put it to him, look, foundations aren't included, but theoretically, and I said theoretically, you know, would you rebuild on these foundations, even if the absence of not being? And he says people have to make up their own mind. But I think he said, I'm sure he said that he would be inclined to try and get them taken out as well, or that's what people might be inclined to do. So if we do, Liam, accept that foundations need to be changed and they're not included in the scheme, that is going to cause problems for everybody who's on the scheme, surely, Liam?
Well, look, I'm not going to sit here stand up for the scheme, right? But what I'm going to say about it is this. My understanding is that the reason the foundations are not included in the scheme is because if you take out the foundations as part of the scheme, or they allow for the foundations to be taken out as part of the scheme. I'm just saying this is my understanding. I could be wrong on this. That it is classified then as a new build. That you're fully, it's a full new build of a house. So therefore, the grant is supposed to be only to help you to remediate the house. Mm. And if you're doing a full rebuild, you're supposed to take it up to today's regulations, what a lot of people are doing anyway when they're building a house. But it's 2012 regulations that you have to build, the standard that you have to build to take the house up to. Anybody wants to improve better than that, as can improve better than that. And look, I know Hugh. I don't know Hugh. I know off Hugh. I'm fully aware this last number of months of the situation is up there. You might know that, but I'm fully aware of it. People talk, and I understand the huge difficulties that Hugh's on there, and I will bring you later on, Hugh. I got an email last night from Hugh, and he asked me to ring him, and I will be ringing him shortly.
Okay. Well,
I'm only after getting fed up with or finished up at work here this morning, and I will be ringing him shortly.
Sorry to see somebody after getting fed up at work. That's how a lot of us feel, but finished up at work. Okay. Hugh, so obviously, you know, Liam's going to give you a call later as you requested him to. You are in an impossible situation. And I don't think, we're in a situation, and I think, and I'll say this to you, Liam, actually, you know, we're probably in a situation and we're standing back to find out what the story is with foundations. And it's not because of what 100% redress says, it's just you do the basic maths and, you know, it would be crazy to rebuild on Weetabix foundations, Liam. You know, I mean, obviously 100% redress are the party that's going to be speaking out on this, but I think a lot of the public have it worked out themselves. Would you accept that?
Yes. Look, I wouldn't expect anybody to build on foundations that are, they see when they get down that far that they're crumbling. Now, this is not scientific. I'm only given what I hear some people saying is that you have a foundation that's in, that is crumbling, but it can't go anywhere. And if you put 15 or 18 inches of concrete on top of that as your foundation again, now, I can't stand over that. I'm not standing over that. I'm just hearing some people saying that. But if you're in that situation and you see that your foundations are crumbling, I know what most of what we'll be looking to do would be to take them out.
All right.
But we have to be careful and be sure that we meet the requirements of the scheme at the same time.
Councillor Liam Blaney, thank you very much indeed. Last word to you, Hugh.
I I think the scheme's appalling, and I say I'm really disgusted at Councillor Blaney's comments. I'm finding myself, I'm 72 next week, so
no,
I'm not going to get a
mortgage. Yeah. Okay.
No, my working days are over. I've got to find 100, and there was a shortfall anyway, in excess of 40,000. So I'm looking at least 130,000.
Well, who has that?
I mean, this scheme isn't fit for purpose. It's an appalling scheme. Mm. What it does is gets people into basically bankruptcy. You don't know if your foundations are faulty until a house is down. And when a house is down, it's down. It's too late. You either face bankruptcy or homelessness.
Okay. Listen,
I'd no way of knowing those foundations were faulty when the house was up, just when it came down.
Right, Hugh, listen,
the
we might have
is absolutely dreadful.
We're right up against the 10 o'clock news. I might get back to you and tease your situation out a little bit more because I feel like I've had to rush you along, and this is life-changing, life-altering stuff that you shouldn't have to be dealing
with. Dreadful, yeah.
So I don't want you to think that me moving on is any disrespect to your situation, and we will return and chat again.
I appreciate the news is imminent.
Okay, thanks,
I'm going out now anyway. Okay, thanks.
All right, look after yourself and have a good day, Hugh. Just to remind you, a little later on, we will be in the garden with Paul. So if you have any questions about gardening, as I say, be it a lawn, be it potted plants in your house, a balcony, whatever, we will endeavour to get answers for you. 086 60 25000. Throw your questions into us right now. I'm joined on the programme by JJ McGowan, who's Integrated Service Lead with the Donegal IHA. Good morning to you, JJ. Thank you so much for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, we're speaking in the context and after a meeting between the HSE and local public representatives and community groups regarding the community nursing unit in Buncrana. I think we all agree it's a crucial facility. Just so some questions, if you don't mind, in relation to this. There was a mix-up with numbers, and the HSE, I think, has held its hands up and sort of admitted to that. What specific internal audit or oversight mechanism would have failed to prevent the reporting of the incorrect 41-bed figure?
It was basic human error, Greg. There was no failure of any audit system. It was a human error. The registered beds in Buncrana Community Hospital are 30. There was an addition of 11 beds during COVID for a COVID ward, and they were a double count. They should have, in the new, what the system or what the unit will look like when the renovation works are completed, should have included them 11 beds instead of adding them on. So they should have been included in the initial 30 registered beds for the unit, not added on to it. Mm. And it was as simple as that.
So when was the double counting error discovered, and why did it take up until it did for it to be publicly corrected?
The discovery was during the week this week. There was correspondence with the public representatives in relation to the error, and then a public representative put the error forward on your show yesterday, and then thus after we put the public statement out in relation to it.
Right. So, I mean, obviously you said it's human error, but who's actually accountable for the verification of that data before it's released to the public or political representatives? There must be a checks and balances, surely.
There is, and there always is, and Donegal IHA Health as a whole is accountable for the facts and figures that go out there. This one got out there. It slipped the net, to be honest, Greg. It was a simple human error that wasn't picked up on before it went to press or before it was discussed at that meeting. It was put into the public remit, and we do sincerely apologise for that.
So with that in mind, what guarantees do we have that all current statistics that are out there at the moment, the project timelines which are there, and the budgetary figures associated with this project, how can we be assured that they are accurate and there is adequate oversight to make sure that they are adequate?
Yeah, true. I suppose heretofore are figures that have gone out publicly and been scrutinised publicly hold up. It's not a piece that this is a constant. This was a once-off incident. We will, as a team, now take this back in, review it to see exactly where it went wrong, and to put mechanisms in place to double check and cross check and make sure that this doesn't happen again or put such information into the public arena.
Obviously, there's been disappointment in the past in relation to this project. So we have the Q3 2026 target. So what specific binding milestones are there for this tender process? Like, when does the tender close? When does construction start?
They're sort of all movable feasts in relation to all public service projects, Greg. We hope to get to go to tender at the end of May in relation to this project. And the HSE estates process then kicks in. The tender's out, a contractor's awarded, a start date on site's agreed with the contractor, and the project's then progress through until handover back to the HSE. But what's really important in this whole project is the bed increase, although not be it to 41, is still increasing in Buncrana Community Hospital up to 36 beds from its current registered status of 30.
Well, just in relation to that, can we get access, or is there information available, specific demographic and clinical demand analysis that supports 36 beds as being sufficient capacity for the Inishowen areas, contrary to the previous expectation of 41, i.e., and you understand the question, of course, what research, what demographic analysis, what clinical demand analysis has been gone through to determine that 36 beds is enough for the future needs of this area?
Okay, so to answer that in the short, it's not. We fully understand that 36 beds is not enough to compete with the increase in demand going forward, because Ireland's, thankfully, and this is a positive, Ireland's population is aging. They're living longer, but they're living longer with more comorbidities. Where we want to get to a place is that them people are able to live longer in their home, not in a community nursing home unit as a whole. So we need to raise all boats in relation to that and try and get more people at home, as opposed to going into community hospitals. In answer to your original question, as I said, 36 is not enough. We would agree with that. But to go back to the start of this project, this was started as a refurb project, not an expansion project. So this is to bring the current beds up to standard for people who, this is some of them, this is their forever home, and they technically live there. So it was to bring them up to compliance standards with HICWA, and to make home comforts in them facilities. We've all been in them. The older units that goes back years, that's the footprint we're dealing with. So where we have to now, and we have done in other units, we have to go in and refurb units to bring them up to living standards of today. So,
do you understand, JJ? Do you understand with respect? And you're not, you know, this is not necessarily within your gift to change it or not. But do you understand how it might sound to the people of Inishowen, where the tender has not even gone out yet, and we have someone in a very senior position stating that 36 beds is not enough? Does that not give us pause to say, well, we need to then increase that bed capacity? If the executive itself knows it's not enough, why are we even progressing at this number then?
No, we're progressing at this number as a refurb project. This project started out as a refurbishment of what was there. What Dermot and the team that met with the representatives last week also agreed to was a review to the whole footprint of the Buncrana Community Hospital campus to seek additionalities where we can going forward. But this in its singular form is a refurb project of what we currently have. The rest will be coming thereafter, which Dermot and the team committed to with the public representatives, continuous engagement with them, and a review of the footprint of the community nursing unit in Buncrana to seek the expansion of day services, and then seek the further expansion down the line of further services that will be required going forward into the future.
Okay, we had the 41 bed announcement. That's been corrected to 36. Does that reduction imply a change in the scope of services to be provided at the facility going forward?
No, definitely not. The facilities will be enhanced at the unit. It'll be brought into a modern era in terms of architecture and home comforts. It'll be fully compliant with HICWA compliances and inspections, and it'll be an enhanced facility for the people that have to use it. But as I said, that's in conjunction with reviewing the whole footprint and seeing what's there and what we can expand on going into the years to come. And it's not a fait accompli that we're just going to do this and that's it for Bunprana and Inishowen. It's not. We have to look at it then, the next steps of how can we build and what we have to further units in or further expand the units that's there.
Okay.
Also looking at the projects that we've done heretofore, the new 110-bed unit in Letterkenny, the Ballyshannon unit that was expanded and enhanced. So it's fallen in line with all them. But this project to start was not an extension project. It was a refurb project initially.
What is the contingency plan for maintaining existing patient and day services while construction is underway?
Day services moved off-site to a location off-site, so that'll look after that piece of it. In relation to the current facilities and how we're going to manage that, it's a sort of movable. We'll renovate parts of the building, move people into one part of the building, renovate where they moved out of, move them back, then renovate where they were. So it's a very complex estates process that we have to build, move back and build where we were, sort of, so to speak, to bring the project to completion.
Yeah, and what about staffing? What do we know about staffing and the strategy for it going forward? Or is it too early in the process for that?
It's a bit early in the process for that, but what we are committed to, if we put the beds in, they have to be staffed, obviously, to be running. There'll be a recruitment process for the additionality beds. We'll have to seek funding for the what's required to service them beds and seek funding for it, get the approvals and move forward with the recruitment process of them staffing for the new unit. But we're committed to the enhancing it to 36 beds and providing the staffing for that 36-bed unit when it's complete.
What are we going to do about communication surrounding this project and other projects? You know, explanations have been retracted or corrected, as we know now. Are there any steps being put in place to restore the reliability of official information and communication?
Yeah, well, Dermot, as IHA leader or manager, has one of his key focuses to us as a team is engagement with staff representatives, family forums, political representatives. So the engagement is happening there. In relation to the Bunprana unit, the date for the next meeting is already set, so that continuous engagement will continue. We as a team will sit down and look at where we got this wrong in relation to the numbers that was put out there. Our history to date would show that we're not in the game of putting out wrong figures. We hope that stands to us in relation to this piece. We do apologise for the error. And going forward, following the review, we hope we won't be back in this situation again.
So the tender, I mean, say for instance, you know, like, The tender will be opened, okay. What happens if it's not closed by the projected date? What happens next? How will we be communicated with to ensure that we're not just dealing with slippage after slippage after slippage with not enough information?
Well, the public reps, as always, will hold us to account in relation to it through their PQs and reps into the system. And as I say, Dermot has and the team that met in Bunprana last week has agreed to continuous engagement with them reps. The next date for that meeting is already set. So the accountability will come through them forums to us. It's up there now. It's one of the key projects that we're progressing with, and we can't say that there'll never be never slippage. Our projects heretofore, the community hospital in Letterkenny, etc., is all on target. We would hope that this one will be the same now that it's going to tender and processing through that.
You agreed earlier on 36 beds is not enough. Do you know the figure that is deemed to be enough?
No.
Should we know that?
It's a change. We probably should, but it'll form part of the on-site negotiations with the team that's there in Buncrana, the community teams that's behind that, the acute hospital team, in relation to what the final figure should be. But that final figure will probably grow at every stage. It's a movable feast. You can't just pin one number. 100 beds is enough for an Inishowen community hospital. On a given day, 100 might be too much. On a given day, 100 might be too little. So you just can't put one figure on it. It's very movable. We have to get to a space that we have a figure that we're aiming towards and a plan then in years to come. Like, and we're chatting 10 years down the line that none of us might be in position, but we need to put a plan in there that's forever growing and just doesn't stay still.
Just in case a listener picks up on that, if you had a crystal ball, if we're talking about the expansion of Buncrana nursing units, do you anticipate it would be 10 years down the line, or was that what we would need to be preparing for in expanding Buncrana Nursing Unit? What do you believe is the timeline for once this refurbishment is done, that more beds, greater facilities would be added for the people of Inishowen?
It's very difficult to put an exact time frame on that, and I would be back in your show and in 3 to 4 months' time, saying, well, you said that the timeline was. It's what we have to do is get in there, see what the footprint of the unit is like, see what the footprint allows for expansion, and then take the research and statistics behind that of the people, the numbers that's needed, put the two of them together, see what's needed, and then see put the time frames on top of that of how long it would take us to get there. That all said, not just in health, but across the whole public service, capital projects are not the fastest thing that move. There's huge complexities with them, and they are slow in their nature, but that's not to say that we will give everything in our power to work with this, to see what we need, and then progress it from there.
In your view, day one after this work is completed, will the appropriate staff be in place to ensure that all beds are open and functioning?
Yes, we will do everything in our power to have them staff in place. There'll be no stone left unturned to get the staff in place. But we are dealing with a full employment market. The 9-to-5 jobs are easier to recruit into than the 7-over-7, 24-7 jobs. And it is difficult to get staff for the disciplines that's needed to run a community hospital. But that's not taken away from it. We will do everything. And we envisage at this stage that the staff will be there. But again, if that is not the case, we'll be open and honest with the reps and the patient advocacy groups in Buncrana when that comes down the line. But that's the next step in the process. The main one now is to get this project to tender, get it out there, and get it moving to build stage.
Finally, you know, I know you put a lot of weight in communicating with the likes of public representatives and for them then to spread the information out to the community. I don't know how to do that. They come on here, they put a post up on Facebook, right? It's not fantastic. Would you consider a town hall public meeting of sorts in Buncrana that would allow the public to hear directly from the HSC, particularly in the context of the errors that have been made up until now? Is that something, do you believe, the HSC would be open to, JJ?
The answer is I don't know, Greg, but I can definitely take it back as a question, and it's something we can look at.
I would respectfully suggest that it would go an awful long way. It would go an awful long way to bringing the public back on board with this project.
Yeah, no problem. We'll take that back, Greg, and we'll get an answer on it, and we'll send it to yourselves. And, of course, obviously, we'll put it through the public reps and yourselves to let it know what's happening. I can't fully commit to it today, but it's something I can definitely take back an answer to.
All you have to do is people want to know that they're being heard, and they are being heard, and that's all you can do. For now, thank you very much indeed for your time. I do appreciate it. Elaine, good morning to you. And I know it's been quite stressful. A very expensive piece of equipment stolen from your own property in the very early hours of Monday morning, Elaine. And I know you and the family very keen for any information that will lead to the recovery of this €7,500 quad.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am good. So what do we know about the vehicle and when it was stolen?
Right, so the vehicle is a Honda 500 TRX 2016, and my husband, Barry, has had it for 5 years, and he would have obviously serviced that and had tyres and all done over the time that he's had it. What we know is from our footage, the quad was taken around 5 a.m. on Tuesday morning, the 28th of April. 4:56 to be exact.
Can I just double check? Is it yesterday morning or Monday morning? Because I was given Monday morning, and I want to make sure we get the absolute. I'm sure you know. So it was yesterday, early hours of yesterday morning. It was taken.
Yes, the early hours.
Tuesday morning,
not like last night. The morning before that.
Understood.
So yes,
Tuesday morning. Right. So pick it up there. So on the CCTV footage, you see a man.
Yeah, so on the CCTV footage, a man comes in and he walks up along the right-hand side of the lane, and he stays out really wide. So he's obviously conscious as well that there may be cameras around. Mm. And then he goes into the shed. You can't really see much of him going in, but he comes out then because there's a small trailer blocking where the quad is. So he had to move the trailer out against a wall, so you can see him bending down then to put the trailer against the wall. Mm-hmm. And he goes back in, and he doesn't even go in directly where the quad is. So he came in and he walked around so that obviously he's not been picked up as much, and he must have like climbed over gates inside, and he spends a few minutes in there then. And the next thing you can see is him pushing the quad out, and he pushed it the whole way over the lane. Like, so, you know, that would take a bit of energy as well.
Do you think it was loaded on something and taken away or driven off at that point?
We think it was, but we can't be sure. Now, my husband is going to go through the footage, obviously, again, in more detail to see if he can come up with anything else. Now, we know that on Monday the 27th, that night, there was a man up mixing slurry, and then my husband had gone up. He had gone up then to put the cows. So he had removed the cows, obviously, from the slats when they were mixing, and he'd gone back up then at night to put the cows back in and all, and left there. And it happened, and it was Tuesday night then at 9:10 at night that he realised the quad was missing.
Right. Okay. So it would have been taken from the Garton to Glenveigh Road in the early hours, just after 5 o'clock yesterday morning. If you were on that road, you'd have seen something and passed that information on. Elaine, I hope you get that back into your possession as soon as is possible. Aaron Piper is a PhD researcher at Atlantic Technological University, Letterkenny. Good morning to you.
Morning.
Thanks for joining us. And you are investigating something really actually quite interesting, and I've read up a little bit about this in the past, and it's how the menstrual cycle influences women's physical activity and quality of life. Right, so is this specifically in sport or generally speaking?
No, so it's pretty much general population, because a lot of the research already is done on like the athletic population, so it's looking at more of the general population, so anyone from who menarche, which is the first period right up to perimenopause, is obviously when you lose your menstrual cycle then.
And this is not just how it might affect someone in a month or 6 months. You are trying to ascertain how it affects people over their whole reproductive life.
Yeah, so the whole way, like I just said, from menarche, which is the first period, right up to menopause. So, yeah.
So what are you exploring, or what do you expect to find, or if you know what I mean?
So over the next 4 years, I'll be doing like 4 different studies. So the one I'm currently doing at the minute is just, I'm basically just gathering all the information that's already been done. And what I can see already is that it's pretty much just done on the athletic population. So the average everyday exerciser, the woman who goes to the gym maybe once or twice a week, is pretty much left out of this research.
There is literally very, very little research, if any, in relation to how this affects over half of the population.
Yeah, and if it is, any of the research that is done, a lot of it just looks at kind of performance output. So how high can we jump between our different phases or between months and month, which like is great for the athletic population, but it doesn't really dive into how a woman feels on day 20 of her cycle or stuff like that, you know. Mm.
And do you think, because, you know, women can be affected differently, and there can be lots of variables, do you think that you'll be able to come up with a finding that is broad enough to sort of capture that 50%+, if that makes sense?
I think it's so independent to the person, and I don't think there'll ever be a one size fits all.
But eventually,
approach.
When you speak to a certain amount of people, trends will emerge.
Yeah, there'll definitely be trends, and like the trend is at the minute that in the luteal phase, which is the second half of the menstrual cycle, when we're building up towards the period, that women do generally feel a lot lower in mood and lower in concentration. They get a lot colder. The motivation is lower to exercise, so that's a trend at the minute. But it just needs to be explored a bit more.
I mean, it's a great gift, but it's blooming unfair too, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well,
I don't mean it funny, but and for such a large period of a person's life.
Yeah, well, we get on average about 450 periods in our lifetime, and so that's like 40 years of a menstrual cycle. And to call like women's health a niche topic is a bit silly when we actually make up half of the population of the world.
2 billion people, menstruate each year. Can the listeners help you in any way, shape, or form?
So at the minute, I'm kind of just doing a review, but I will be putting out a call for participants in later studies that I do. So if anyone does want to get in touch about my research or anything, they can contact the ATU, or they can find me on LinkedIn or any other social media. So
yeah, just search Erin Piper, P-Y-P-E-R,
yeah,
right?
That's it.
And I think it really says it all, doesn't it? And this is to praise your work, not to diminish it in any way, shape or form. But here you are, the person starting this 4 years of research that hasn't been done heretofore.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I've been looking at it from my undergrad and my master's degree as well. So all in all, when I finish, it'll be about 10 years of work put into this. So hopefully I can fill a little bit of a gap.
I think it's really important work. Yeah. Okay, you'll keep us up to date when you perhaps maybe are seeking participants or what have you.
Will do, yes.
Because you'll need to go, it'll have to be broad, right? So it can't just be 500 white people in Donegal.
No,
do you know what I'm saying?
No, all race,
you will
everyone,
have to go through all different backgrounds and ages and all manner. So it's going to be a ton of work.
Yeah, it's going to be it will be a big study. It's a big undertaking, but the more people that get involved, it's more beneficial for the study.
So. And to get to the point where you've been awarded funding is a huge achievement as well already. So
you must
be very proud of yourself.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, Research Ireland is a pretty prestigious award, so
it's pretty cool. Okay,
yeah.
We're very proud of you. Thanks, Erin.
Thank you.
If there's anything down the line, of course, you know what we can do here, we'll be more than happy to assist with you. Congratulations.
Lovely, thank you.
Getting it this far. Erin Piper, PhD researcher, Atlantic Technological University, Letterkenny. Dry, sunny, but a little breezy today, Wednesday, with mostly moderate easterly winds developing for the afternoon. Temperatures 14 to 17 degrees cooler the further east you go. That is a good lead in to my final guest of the show, Paul McLaughlin, gardener at Ballagher Garden Centre, Mountain Top, Letterkenny. How are you, Paul?
Not so bad. Thanks
good
for
to have
me.
You back in. Right, we have to really manage our expectations. Summer's not till June, if the truth be told. We got a bit of good weather end April, and we believe it to be summer, but we don't know what May has in store for us yet.
Absolutely not. No, I think everybody's sort of everybody's dying to get out to the garden. They've actually been it's been a long, hard winter and spring. So it has. So everybody's just with a bit of good weather now. Everybody's just dying to get out. But now, if the wicks of bedding plants, you're probably starting a wee bit early yet.
Is that because of their readiness, or is that because of the potential for 1-2 degrees, etc.?
Yes. Now, there is still the potential for frost. Certain plants, like your marigolds, begonias, that sort of thing, would be susceptible to like 1-2 degrees. So they would. So generally, what we would always advise is, like, lose a week or two at the end of the season. It could make you a month at the back end of the season.
But say, for instance, in your greenhouses, they're thriving up.
Yes, absolutely. Everything's flying along, so it is. So now, definitely within 1 week, you should be good to go. It's just, you're always watching the weather forecast, stuff like that, you know.
Yeah,
you can
for
never
sure.
Be sure.
Yeah, are people lucky enough to have a lawn as well? I mean, a lot of lawn cutting ongoing, which obviously inevitably leads to that disappointment that you've a moss carpet.
Exactly. It's been an exceptionally wet winter and spring, so moss is a huge problem this year.
Does it have to be treated?
Does have no?
Or does exposing it to air and light?
Exposing to air does help, all right. So it does now. Definitely, the better airflow you have, the less moss, theoretically. And even by taking out that old dead grass and stuff, you're actually reducing the amount of moisture that lies at the bottom of the grass.
And does it sort of become a competition between grass and moss for the same space? And
it does.
In the right environment, grass will win?
Exactly. And even if you do a treatment and actually remove the moss, it's important to sort of colonise the grass in that
reseed
that you've taken out, because if you don't, the moss will come back.
And can you do that now?
Yes, now's the perfect time to do that.
Is it?
Because the ground's still almost soft enough to do it.
Do you think people aren't prepared to sort of stand back and give that space the space at this time of year? Isn't that why we kind of go at it in the winter? Because
yes,
kind of.
I suppose it's sort of an ongoing year-round fight, if you know what I mean. But now into April, May is the main time. If you're using any of the chemical treatments or any, sorry, the more organic products now, you can actually use them from now on. And they take a bit of heat to actually work. So they should actually work more effectively now at this time of year.
I mean, there were spells of cold weather, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't an Arctic winter, but it was a very wet one. Does that matter heading into spring, summer, or does the ground just bounce back?
The ground generally bounces back. We've actually been working on the ground started last week. It was just an amazing turning point. Like, it went from very wet to quite dry quite quickly. So it did. So it's sort of gardening with the seasons. In terms of eventually it does come like that, if you know what I mean.
We are still interested in growing our own stuff, right?
Yes.
What's the crack this time of year?
This time of year is perfect time. A lot of people would be panicking that maybe because the ground is so wet, they're having stuff in, like onions, potatoes. It's not too late. So anytime sort of first half of May.
I mean,
okay.
Spuds don't really have a calendar either.
Pretty much.
I mean, they don't go, it's the 1st of April, I ain't sprouting.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, generally,
whatever
people,
they do.
The old gardeners used to tell St. Patrick's Day, you would have put it in. But anytime really, I've seen us put them in as late as middle of May, even towards the last week in May. And they will come. Obviously, you have a later crop, but they will come. So it's not too late. Don't be panicking if you haven't got them in.
Yes, right. So what should we be doing now that we haven't covered already then?
Yes, pretty much.
Take a drink of your water. Go on, I'll count to five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There we go.
Very good. Pretty much, I was what would advise.
Even you need water now and again.
Yes, exactly. We don't do too well without it. But now, generally, if you haven't already done it, a good tidy up now sort of shows you the areas that do need a bit of attention maybe in the garden. Your lawn, if you're going to treat it, now is a perfect time. You can go down the chemical route. A lot of people use the sulfate of iron, that sort of stuff. If you don't want to do that, you can actually just hire a scarifying machine that will actually do it and take out a lot of the moss itself. So now is a perfect time to do it as well.
And of course, that's going to look a bit harsh early on, isn't it?
Yes, but the beauty of doing it this time of year is the growth's strong, so it actually bounces back quite quickly.
Yeah. We had a little bit of work done and got new, it's not soil, it was just the soil that was dug up, put down again. I reseeded it, and I'd be hard pushed to know where it was now. It's astonishing how quickly it recovers.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the grass really is all the same grass. It's all green.
Pretty much. Within about 2 weeks, you'll see it coming up. And then after maybe 4 or 5 weeks, you shouldn't see much of a difference in it.
Right. So you say it is a little bit too early for bedding plants. Hold off a little bit. A good tidy around is what you need to be doing now at this point, right? People have done a first mow with you. There's no point even talking about that.
No, exactly. So now probably we'll be continuing mowing from now on, really. If you've done the first one a wee bit higher up, no left in the blades a bit. You can let them down a wee bit now.
You've either done the first mow of the year or you've stood there with the pole handle in your hand.
Yeah, pretty much. You're just at the stage you'd be strimming nearly.
Because of the brittleness over the winter. Beeswax, apparently. Is it beeswax? It's supposed to be very good for your pole handles. Why have my daffodils not bloomed? I lifted and divided them last year and replanted them, and only half of them have bloomed this year. The rest of them have been very healthy and have very healthy-looking stems, but no flowers, Paul.
Yes, possibly the lifting and replanting maybe just sort of upset their cycle a wee bit, if you know what I mean. What you could do at this time of year is just, if you know the general area where they are, just spread a bit of general purpose fertilizer or our friend the chicken manure.
Chicken poo's back for 26.
Exactly. Yeah, it never went away.
It came into conversation recently enough, but chicken poo's back, baby.
Yes.
Last year, my apples were destroyed by wasps and flies. How can I prevent this happening again this year?
I suppose very hard to keep them off them completely. Probably good hygiene practices. They're generally attracted to the ones on the ground first. So if some of your apples fall off, it's important to actually remove them quite quickly.
It becomes a feeding spot, effectively.
Yeah, and then pretty much, and see the ones up above. Generally, the only way was people used to put like tight and stuff over them, you know, just to actually make a barrier. Or the other thing is to make around it more attractive. You see, if you go to the bottle bank or the recycling machines, you see there's like wasp traps there. It's like they're jamming them and stuff.
Yeah.
So that generally...
Just competing with them,
pretty much. So they're sweeter and more attractive than the apples.
Yeah.
So maybe put a few of them up in the region of the trees.
I've green fly on my roses. I've sprayed with washing up liquid and spray from the shop. Any advice?
Generally, green fly looked at in roses. Vigilance is the main one.
Mm.
Is if you catch them early, it actually is much less of a problem to deal with than if it becomes a full infestation. But you can make garlic spray. Just make it at home. Probably Google the recipe.
Did you boil it or something?
Yeah, you just boil like the bulb of garlic.
Yeah.
And then use the water that you boiled it in and spray it onto the roses and it makes them...
It'd keep me away from them.
Yes. Yeah. can have vampire.
When do I put food on my tomato plants? They're in about 4 weeks.
About 4 weeks. Generally, whenever the first flowers appear. The flowers will be appearing now in the next few weeks. Once they appear, water or sort of feed every 10 to 14 days.
Because we have to be careful not to kill things with kindness.
Exactly. So now 10 to 14 days is a good balance in terms of you should be getting plenty of growth without actually putting them on too much.
This is a nice message, but probably tainted with the emotion from the person. But anyway, I replanted a rose. It's got sentimental value. Or is it sentimental? It is. It's got sentimental value. So I want to ensure it grows. Any advice?
Yes. Pretty much at this time of year, you get specific rose fertiliser or even your poultry manure will do.
Mm. Is there anything you can do with that to get a second chance? You know, like, can you split it or...?
Generally, what you would let it do is grow on for the first year.
Okay.
And then you can actually take more cuttings off it.
Yeah.
Then in the next year. So it's important sort of to make it survive the first year.
Mm.
Then take more cuttings off it and you'll have an insurance policy then.
All right. So what should they be doing right now then?
Generally, fertilizer, keep an eye on it. As a previous point there, just keep an eye out for green fly.
Yeah. Stuff like that. And would that be inside or outside?
Generally, outside.
Generally outside.
But now, roses like that, you should have a good enough success rate.
Yeah, it's just because that one means so much to that listener. I have a problem with mare's tail at the moment. It's thick pink stalks with brown heads, but later in the summer it's green and kind of looks like a small Christmas tree. How can I get rid of it? The mare's tail made an early appearance.
Yes, mare's tail. I suppose I've been here a good few years. Mare's tail always makes an appearance at some stage. Generally, the sort of advice is the same. This stuff, it's been around since the dinosaurs, so we'll probably never get rid of it. But generally, because it's got a sort of silica coating on it, is break it up first and then apply weed killer if you're going to. Mm. If it's on hard surfaces, a lot of times you get de-icing salt.
It's astonishing, the strength of it. I still can't really figure out how it comes up through stuff.
Exactly, it's because it can burst tarmac and everything else.
Yeah, exactly, I know. And I was watching a program there recently too about bamboo.
Mm-hmm.
Bamboo's kind of controversial. It used to be very popular down our way. There'd be bamboo everywhere. But that stuff literally grows with a spike.
Aye, absolutely.
And can grow through floors, like, it's astonishing.
I know, it's crazy. It's crazy the amount of... Even actually seen videos on the internet where you can almost see it growing.
Yeah, like, the speed in which it grows is astonishing. Is it used at all here locally, or...?
Bamboo, I suppose people would import the canes, if you know what I mean. But no,
but it's not grown.
Yes, okay. No, I don't think it's actually grown for anything particular. Maybe some people, I don't know, like, certain reeds are used for, like, sewage treatment for the... Stuff comes out of it afterwards. Mm.
But people don't choose to have it on their property for beautification as such.
I know they do, to an extent. Some people, but you need a huge garden for it.
Yeah. Good morning. Can you ask Paul, please, what is the best plants for pots now around the outside of the house? I tried to ask you about this yesterday, and you chased me out of the garden centre.
Yes, sorry. Now, plants for pots, generally, as we were saying earlier, the bedding plants, if you leave it a couple of weeks, sort of the world's your oyster. You have.
I'm not sure I can wait a couple of weeks.
Right, very good. At this stage, basically pansies, violas, that sort of stuff, it's all perfectly ready to go and frost hardy and everything else. But now there are plenty of options there. Just call into your local garden centre and they'll be able to advise.
Great stuff. And do you see the uptick in footfall when the weather gets good this time of year?
That's crazy. As soon as the sun shines, we're flat out. So we are.
Yeah, which is fantastic. And it just goes to show what it means to us, doesn't it? Right. Okay, Caroline, just come here a sec. So it was Monday night into Tuesday morning at 5 a.m. I did mention that we clarified that. That's the quad, right? So it's a period for dash cam footage, etc. Okay, I think people know that at this stage. All right, brilliant stuff. Right, what was I going to say? Yeah, it's busy, busy, busy. I think I've got all the questions that I have to hand at the moment. And long may the weather continue like this. Yes. But I think realistically, listen, there's going to be a change start of May.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we'll not feel quite as gardeny for a bit, but the weather will certainly pick up.
That always bounces back, all right.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Thanks so much for calling in to us. That's Paul McLaughlin of Ballacter Garden Centre. Garden Centre's wonderful, friendly places, not just Ballacter, but right across the region. It's just one of those industries where you always meet really nice people who are very keen to help you. So just to clarify in relation to that quad, just for fear that there's any ambiguity at all. So this quad was stolen in the Churchill area Monday night into Tuesday morning at 5 a.m. So that would be yesterday morning. Any dash cam, home CCTV, anywhere in and around or along the Garton to Glenvay Road. Obviously that family very keen to get that back. We got loads of comments following our interview as it relates to Buncrana Community Hospital, but also to our conversation on the defective concrete block scheme. You haven't wasted your time. I'll read those out on the show tomorrow, but that's where we have to leave it for today. Have a wonderful Wednesday, everyone. Enjoy this weather whilst you can, and if you can. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.